when it was in Fails possession, his son Hendrik stole the gem, ruining his father, who was said to have died from grief. Hendrik Falls then gave the diamond to a man named Francis Bolu in payment of a debt. So in other words, Hendrik was a crackhead. Yep, he was a crackhead. Sorry, people, that's crackhead lingo right there. I mean, definitely crackhead. He was doing drugs, people. Don't do drugs. Otherwise, you're going to be stealing shit. You're going to kill your father, send him into grief, and what, just to pay back a $60 crack rock? You guys are despicable.
Welcome back to the Rainy Day Horror Show. I'm Big Daddy D, and you are listening to the number one podcast on the internet. And on today's beautiful episode, Dusty is going to be finishing this story on the Hope Diamond. Yes, this is the part two, if you didn't read the title of the episode. So, without further ado, I'm going to introduce your host for this evening's show, Dusty McBalls, aka the Certified Cougar Hunter, and your host with the most. Now sit back, shut up, and enjoy this episode.
Thank you, Big D, for that beautiful little intro. And yes, my beautiful people, it is part two to the Hope Diamond. Now, for a quick little recap, we found out that this diamond originates from India. Somehow, Jacques Tavernier got his hands on it, whether he stole it from an idol. An idol. I don't know. A religious idol in India, right? And he stole it out of one of the eyes of this idol, okay? I think so, if I remember correctly, okay? To be honest, I didn't listen to the last episode on the Hope Diamond, so I'm completely going off of memory here. And then he ended up selling it to King Louis the 14th. I believe, and Jacques had no issues with the Hope Diamond, right? No curses, no nothing. He actually sold it, got rich, and just lived a lavish lifestyle. But when King Louis the 14th got his hands on it, shit started going sideways, you know? Death of 7 out of his 10 children, right? And then his wife also... Was it his wife or his mistress? One of them died. And then after that, it was given to his grandson. His grandson? I think it was his grandson. And he put the French in, like the French country, state, whatever, into complete and utter bankruptcy. Just did not give a shit and was spending like his life depended on it. And that's where we left off. He eventually died, and so did his partner, I believe. And now we are on to King Louis the 16th. And there is another another big name that is about to pop up, right? Like I said, this whole diamond is just has rich history to it. If you're a history buff, you probably want to get your hands on this diamond, right? It might be cursed, okay? Depending on who you are, all right? Personally, I don't want to fuck with this thing because a lot of people that have come into contact with it, awful shit happens to them. And I don't want to fucking deal with that, okay? So I believe it's cursed. But if you're like, Dusty, you're so fucking stupid. How can a diamond be cursed, right? Well, I don't know, okay? Listen, I'm just saying, with all the tragedy that's happened so far and the tragedy that is about to begin this episode and end this episode, it is no. You can keep the Hope Diamond and go fuck yourself, okay? Not dealing with it. I'm sorry. No, not going to. I don't even want to get within 500 yards of this fucking thing. This thing fucking terrifies me, people. And I'm naturally, you know, I always get the bad luck stints where it's like really, really bad luck. Like everything I touch crumbles, okay? And listen, I don't want to amplify that shit, okay? I already have enough of it. I don't want to deal with it. So you can have it. But we're going to jump into this episode. It's Friday. You know, it's your last day of work for the week, and then we can party fucking tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. Well, I mean, if you're a lunatic, you'll party Sunday. But listen, if you day drink, that's okay, all right? Just don't get smacked on Sunday night, showing up to work, you know, between the hours of 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. hungover, right? We don't want that. I don't want that for you, because that sounds awful, right? But then again, I guess I can't control you. So, you can do what you want, motherfucker. If you want to get drunk on Sunday night, I guess, by all means, do it. But, let's just escape reality for a, I don't know how long this episode is, because like I said, I don't fucking see it until after I'm done recording. So, it's probably going to be around an hour. That's what I'm shooting for. You already know what time it is, but I don't. So, without further ado, we're going to get into this beautiful episode on the Hope Diamond, part two. So, now, when this diamond was passed on to King Louis the 16th, he was just 20 years old when he basically took over the throne after King Louis the 15th died. Now, when the 16th, the Louis 16th, took over, he was, I don't know, he was a little weird, okay? He was immature, right? He was lacking in self-confidence, like a lot of 20-year-olds do, okay? No disrespect to you 20-year-olds that are lacking confidence. It's okay. You're a young adult trying to make, why the fuck am I speaking like I'm 40 years old? Okay, I'm not that old, right? But I'm just saying, it's okay to lack confidence, all right? You'll get there. We all get there eventually, so. Now, other than lacking confidence, he was kind of a strict asshole. He really, really was. And with these specific traits, he assumed the responsibilities of running a nation that was now heavily in debt thanks to his predecessors. And his approval of the French military and financial support of the colonists in the American Revolution led to foreign policy success. But he still had to borrow money and required to pay for that war. And it drove the government on the brink of bankruptcy. Not yet. We're almost there. We're really, really close. But that's what happened. And this, because he was on the brink of bankruptcy, this led the king to support radical fiscal, economic, and administrative reforms during the Age of Enlightenment, which encouraged individual liberty and religious tolerance and opposed an absolute monarchy and the fixed ideas or teachings of the Roman Catholic Church. And with the king's support of these radical fiscal reforms, they were not favorable by the nobles or among the other people. And just to make matters even worse, the French people hated, absolutely hated, the king's wife. Okay? Now this person I'm about to introduce, she's a badass bitch. Okay? She is known throughout all of history. Okay? And what I'm about to say is going to give it away. Okay? She is known as the Cake Lady. And if you know who the Cake Lady is, you're fucking smart. You've been paying attention in history class. And with that, my hat's off to you. Okay? Now, if you're still on, like, the verge of, like, maybe I got it, but I still don't have a clue who you're fucking talking about, Dusty. All right? You're not dumb. Okay? You're not dumb. All right? You maybe just have forgot, or you weren't paying attention like me in school. Okay? Trust me. Fuck school. Hated it. I skipped basically once a week. Okay? Don't know how I graduated, but we did. Right? Now, the lady I'm talking about is the one, the only, the most impeccable woman in history, Marie Antoinette. And the reason the French people hated her so much was because she was promiscuous.
Ooh.
Sexy.
Ooh.
Scandalous.
Ooh.
Right? She sympathized to the French enemies. She was frivolous. And she was extravagant. Which, in return, kind of discredited the monarchy. And with this friction within the country, it ended up leading to one of the biggest wars in French history, the French Revolution. And on October 5th, 1789, for the people that don't know what the French Revolution is, an angry mob of Parisian working men and women marched to the Palace of Versailles and forcibly moved the royal family to Paris because they felt that the king would be more accountable to the people if he lived among them. And after he was moved to Paris, Louis ignored advice from advisors and refused to basically resign from the throne. And to avert the deepening crisis, Louis agreed to summon the Estates General, quote unquote, Estates General. And what that is it's a form of parliament, but it doesn't have any real power. Even though he summoned the Estates General, he still refused to allow the state, church, and Estates General to meet simultaneously, causing the Third Estate to proclaim itself a national assembly and declared that only it had the right to represent the nation. Then, in June 1971, the royal family attempted to escape and move out of Paris. But they were soon brought back to Paris, by which, around this time, the king had lost all credibility as a monarch. And in September of 1792, the new national convention abolished the monarchy and declared France as a republic. And then, get this, 1 year later, well, not actually 1 year later, like 3 months later, King Louis the 16th was found guilty of treason and executed at the guillotine on January 21st, 1793. And his wife, Marie Antoinette, aka the Cake Lady, was executed 9 months later. Now you may be wondering, did they come into contact with the Hope Diamond, Dusty? Is that what's happening here? Yes. Yes, they did. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been in the story. Okay? Sorry, not trying to be an asshole, but I'm just saying they wouldn't have been in the story if they didn't come in contact with the Hope Diamond. Now, they were both seen wearing this blue diamond on several occasions. The Queen's lady-in-waiting, Marie Theresa, who is the Princess de Lamballe,
once again, there's a lot of French words. I'm not fucking French. I can't help it, okay?
Who was a close confidant with Marie Antoinette and King Louis the 16th, was also seen wearing the diamond as well. And after Louis and Antoinette were imprisoned, Therese, because there's no A at the end, and now I don't know pronunciations, okay? And after their imprisonments, Marie Therese refused to denounce King Louis the 16th. And as a result of that, she was dragged from the court and thrown into a violent mob. And when she was thrown into this mob, the crowd stripped her, tortured her, and decapitated the princess before placing her head on a pike. And this is so funny. I get a kick out of this. I think it's absolutely hilarious. After the decapitation and head sticking of the princess, they then paraded their prized possession outside the prison window of former queen Marie Antoinette. And in the meantime, while they were doing this, parading around with the stick and the head, the jewels of the French royal treasury had been turned over to the new government. And once they were turned over, there was a week-long looting of the crown jewels in September of 1792. And the French blue diamond was stolen. While many jewels were later recovered, including other pieces of the Order of the Golden Fleece, the French blue was not among them, and it simply just poof, disappeared from history, I guess. Yeah, it was just gone. It fell into a portal and did not want to come back. Now, during the missing years of this diamond, a Dutch diamond cutter named Wilhelm Fails, somehow obtained the diamond and recut the precious stone to hide the jewel's identity. On completion, the 69-carat stone was reduced to the 45-carat blue Hope diamond that we see today. When it was in Fails' possession, his son Hendrik stole the gem, ruining his father, who was said to have died from grief. Hendrik Fails then gave the diamond to a man named Francis Beaulieu in payment of a debt. So in other words, Hendrik was a crackhead. Yep, he was a crackhead. Sorry, people, that's crackhead lingo right there. I mean, definitely crackhead. He was doing drugs, people. Don't do drugs. Otherwise, you're going to be stealing shit, you're going to kill your father, send him into grief, and what, just to pay back a $60 crack rock? You guys are despicable. You guys are so fucking despicable. Can't take it. Can't take it anymore. Drink break. That's why I was going off on a tangent. Drink break. If you're wondering what today's drink of choice is, it is Black Raspberry Sparkling Ice. Sponsored. Just kidding, it's not sponsored. But I do like ice, okay? Now, a lot of white women are going to give me shit because I hate LaCroix. I really fucking hate LaCroix. Well, I guess a lot of rich people drink LaCroix.
Sparkling water.
Yeah, no. Fuck LaCroix. I hate LaCroix. It's just so gross. It's like shoving a tampon in your urethra. Like, bleh, no. And I'm not talking like a normal tampon. I'm talking like a bloody fucking dried up, shriveled up, like fully exposed, like fucking... I just used an oxymoron. I know, okay? Right? I didn't mean to say shriveled because that wouldn't make sense. It's like a filled up bloody tampon that's all dried out and crusted and you're trying to cram it in your just fucking urethra. That's what it feels like. Going down my throat. Not the tampon, but LaCroix. I hate it. It's nasty. I don't want to talk about it anymore. But yes. Hendrick was a crackhead. Now, after he sold the diamond to Francis, Francis, then traveled to Marseille, France. I believe that's how you say it. From Marseille, France to London, England to sell the diamond to a jewel dealer named Daniel Eliason. However, when the jeweler went to pay below, or Francis, he found him dead in a lodging house, succumbing to a fever. And years later, Hendrick Fales killed himself in 1830 because he didn't have enough money for crack. Poor Hendrick. Just needed some drugs. Couldn't go anywhere because probably, you know, family wasn't liking that he was doing drugs and they were kicking him out and didn't want him around. He was always tweaking, fucking scratching at his arms, just freaking the fuck out, right? All he needed was some drugs and he couldn't get drugs because he didn't have money and then he had to kill himself. Poor Hendrick. Now, in the meantime, the public was unaware of the whereabouts of this diamond until a man named Jean Francillon documented that a large blue diamond was in London, England in 1812. Which is another crazy year, the War of 1812. Don't know 100% what it was because I can't remember, but it was a war, okay? Now listen, this diamond has caused so many wars, that's fucking crazy. And he described the stone as weighing over 45 carats and was in the possession of a London diamond merchant, Daniel Eliason, and the gem was for sale. Because of its size and unusual color, the stone suggested that it was recut from the French blue stolen 10 years previously. Shortly afterward, the jeweler Daniel Eliason, after coming in contact and handling the stone, committed suicide. Then, after that, 10 years later, in 1822, a portrait of King George the Ninth, I believe it is. It's the IV. I think that's the Ninth. I could be completely fucking wrong. I sound like a fucking idiot right now. I think it's the Nine. 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 Or is it 19? No. No, it'd be the 4. Hold on. Is it 4? I have to look this up. Give me 2 seconds, because now I feel stupid. Let me see. Roman numeral for number 4. I think it's the 4th. I don't know why I said 9, because X, I think, is 10. I'm pretty sure. But I could be completely wrong. Okay, yeah, it is the 4th. God, I'm so fucking smart. Okay, so in 1822, a portrait of King George IV of England was painted in which the king was wearing the insignia of the Royal Order of the Golden Fleece set with a large blue stone bearing a striking resemblance to the French blue diamond. When King George died in 1830, his estate was encumbered by outstanding debt, and it is thought that the diamond, along with other jewelry and personal effects, were sold to cover the many debts he had left behind. Fast forward 9 years, in 1839, a large blue diamond appeared in the gem catalog of Henry Philip Hope, a London banker, and at this time, the jewel became known as the Hope Diamond. After Hope died later on in 1839, and litigation within the family, the stone was passed on to his nephew, Henry Thomas Hope. There's so many fucking names, it's confusing me now. Henry Thomas Hope in 1841. Later, the precious stone would pass to Henry Thomas Hope's grandson, Lord Francis Hope, who lived for fucking ever. Then, in 1894, Lord Francis Hope met American concert hall singer May Yohe. Don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but we're rolling with it. And the two married that year. By the time these two were married in 1894, Hope was nearly bankrupt, like everybody else in this fucking episode. And the last one, it just seems to be a reoccurring theme here. But him and his wife ignored their financial problems and still lived a lavish lifestyle and gambled, traveled, did whatever they wanted to do. And they squandered, got rid of everything he had left, including jewelry, heirlooms, pictures, art, and land. He then began to borrow money, sending him even further into debt. And by the time the 1900s hit, they made a tour of the world and on their way home met Captain Putnam Bradley Strong, who was a handsome and popular man in the United States Army. Now, if you know Putnam, you know that name sounds familiar on this channel. First episode, Salem Witch Trials. Well, it's not the name of the episode, but the farmer of Salem, right? Forgot his name. Giles Corey, I think is what his name was. You know, if you listen to that episode, that Putnam is a really, really big name within the Salem witch trials and just the Salem community. I think he was one of the founders of Salem. I don't know. Can't remember, but his name comes back up again. So I don't know if they're related or not. I didn't go look through their ancestry.com, but could be related. So, and when the couple, Yohe and Hope, met Captain Putnam Bradley Strong, Yohe fell head over heels for him and basically started marrying him and refused to return to England with Lord Francis. Now, after Lord Francis had that whole debacle with his wife, well, former wife, in 1901, he sold the Hope Diamond to help pay off his debts. And the following year, 1902, he claimed bankruptcy, lost his foot in a hunting accident, and divorced May Yohe. But he remarried in 1904 and had three children, inherited dukedom from his brother in 1928, and died a poor man in 1941 at the age of 75. So, he was turning his life around, but then just decided to get fucked once again. Which is funny. Sorry, Mr. Hope, but it's kind of funny. Now we're going to go back a few steps to May and Putnam. We're going to cover them because some happened to them too. Now, during their marriage, May was known to have worn the diamond at least once. Sorry, we're not going back to Putnam. We're going back to fucking Hope and May. I get my fucking people mixed up with this episode. This is bad. And she has been seen wearing the diamond at least once, but she later claimed she had worn it at several social gatherings, although Lord Francis claimed otherwise. After she and Hope divorced, she married the handsome army captain, but was divorced just a few late. A few years later. Afterward, she maintained a stage career off and on and married several more times. As the years went by, she was reduced to working as a housekeeper and a clerk, and she died in poverty in 1938 at the age of 72. Now, by the 1900s, stories of this diamond's curse had been flourishing for years, with some saying that the original form of the Hope Diamond was stolen from the eye of a sculpted statue who happens to be the goddess Sita. And she is the wife of Rama, and those are big names within Hindu religion, okay? Though many believe the precious stone was cursed due to its owner's many tragedies, others felt strongly that these tales were perpetuated to add mystique to the stone, increase its sales appeal, and increase newspaper sales. In 1901, the stone was sold by Lord Francis Hope to Adolf Hoyle, a London jewel merchant who in turn sold it to diamond dealer Simon Frankel in New York for $148,000. Let's see how much that is in today's time. Give me 2 seconds. Dollars in 1901. What is that? No way that can be true. No way that can be true. Sorry, people. I'm keeping you in suspense right now because I need to... No way. It's saying, I don't know if this is I have to make sure this is true. Because it's saying it's $480 million. I don't know if that's accurate. I did enter a number, you whore. What the fuck? Okay, I don't know what the fuck is going on. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I don't know how accurate that is, but if that's true, $480 million, that's a lot of fucking money. That is a lot of fucking money. Now, after Adolf sold the diamond to Simon, his story gets a little wishy-washy here for a second, okay? Now, depending on, well, because this thing goes back so far in history that, you know, there's going to be some issues with the story. There's going to be different versions of the Hope Diamond. And this is where we come into some other, well, not some other, but where certain stuff starts to get crossed, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Because in some versions of the history of this diamond, Frankel kept the diamond until he sold it to Suleyman Habib, a wealthy Turkish diamond collector, in 1908. However, other versions say that between 1901 and 1908, the stone was bought and sold several times. Allegedly, the first to purchase it was French banker Jacques Collet, and he bought the diamond from Simon Frankel. And just a short time later, Collet went mad and committed suicide. After he offed himself, it was then sold to Russian Prince Ivan Kanatowski, who loaned it to his lover, actress Laurence Ledoux. Now, the first time she wore the diamond on stage, she was shot by a man in the audience that many people said was the Russian prince himself, Ivan, right? Just had to clarify in case people forgot. Now, just a few weeks later, Kanatowski was stabbed to death in Paris by Russian revolutionaries. And by this time, the legend of the curse had increased, and an article entitled "Hope Diamond has brought trouble to all who have owned it" appeared in the Washington Post in 1908. And that exact same year, the stone was back in possession of the Frankels, who made a concerted effort to sell what they called the Hood Diamond. And the following person to get said Hood Diamond was a well-known Greek jeweler broker named Simon, Moncherides, who acquired the stone in late 1908. He quickly sold the diamond to Habib Bey, who is a Persian diamond merchant, and on the night that the deal was, you know, concluded, Simon accidentally drove his carriage over a precipice, killing himself, his wife, and his child. And after that incident, Habib Bey quickly sold the stone to Suleyman Habib, acting on behalf of Abdul Hamid II, who is the Sultan of Turkey. And within months of selling said diamond, Habib drowned during the sinking of a French steamer in 1909. After that, Abdul Hamid II, known as Abdul the Damned, gave the Hope Diamond to his favorite concubine, Salma Zubayaba. Whoa, that's funny. I like that word. I like that name. With orders that it should be protected by Kulub Bey, his favorite. I don't know why I put this word in there, because I don't know what it is. His favorite person and guardian of the Sultan's treasure. And just a few months later after that, Zubayaba was stabbed and killed by a low-level official in the treasury who tried to steal the gem. The thief that did the stabbing, Javir Agha, was caught by Kulub Bey and hung after being tortured. Another man named Abu Sabir, who was tasked with polishing the stone for the Sultan, was unfairly accused of working with Javir Agha and was tortured and executed. Shortly after this incident, Abdul Hamid II was overthrown during the Young Turks' Rebellion of April 1909, and the Sultan was later captured and imprisoned at the Belyurbeyi Palace in Istanbul, Turkey. Legend has it that Kulub Bey was captured by a mob after the uprising and was slowly strangled to death. Now, after that incident, we're at the point of this episode where there's going to be a lot of and then next and then after and the following years. There's going to be a lot of that coming up because it's just going to come rapid now. Now, after that incident, the stone was then sold to Parisian jeweler merchant Simon Rosineau, who sold it in 1910 to Paris Cartier, a French jeweler who owned one of the most respected firms in Paris, London, and New York. Now, I think this is the Cartier watch people, but I could be completely fucking wrong. That year, Cartier tried to sell it to American mining heiress and socialite Evelyn Walsh McLean, and at that time, she wasn't interested. However, when Cartier reset the diamond into a more modern piece, he then sold it to Edward B. McLean, and on behalf of his wife Evelyn, in January of 1911 for $180,000. Though both Edward and Evelyn had been warned not to buy the diamond by Edward's mother and May Yohi, the sale went through. However, it was not an easy sale, as negotiations took several months, which got polluted into a lawsuit, and the buyers required a blessing by a priest. Which brings us to the stupid that Evelyn committed. Yes, I worded that intentionally to sound weird, but Evelyn did something so fucking stupid. Evelyn, when she officially got the diamond, she started to mock the curse and was joking that things that brought other people bad luck usually gave her good luck. And Edward wasn't really convinced by this statement, and as the original contract with Cartier included a clause stating, should any fatality occur to the family of Edward B. McLean within 6 months, the said Hope Diamond is agreed to be exchanged for jewelry of equal value. A description of the gemstone stated, it lay on a bed of white silk and surrounded by many small white diamonds cut pear shaped. Now, Mrs. McLean wore this diamond publicly for the first time to a reception in February of 1912. Afterward, she would be seen wearing the precious stone at numerous social events. A bale was soldered to the pennant where Mrs. McLean would often attach other diamonds, including the McLean Diamond and the Star of the East. Now, oh my god, I lost my spot. Now, where the fuck is it? Now, even though Evelyn joked about the curse and kept the diamond until the end of her life, numerous tragedies occurred during her lifetime. Shortly after she got the diamond, her mother-in-law died, and in 1919, her 9-year-old son, Vincent, ran in front of a car and was killed. In 1929, Edward McLean went off with another woman and even claimed to have married her, but there were no records of that. It didn't say that he officially did, from what I could find. Then, in the meantime of all that shit happening, of him running off and allegedly getting married to another woman, both Edward and Evelyn continued to spend lavishly and then officially divorced in 1932. The following year, Edward McLean's increasingly erratic behavior and reckless spending led to the forced sale of the Washington Post newspaper in 1933, which he had inherited in 1916. And in that exact same year, Edward was declared legally insane due to brain atrophy brought on by alcoholism. The court ordered that he be committed indefinitely to a psychiatric hospital, and he was never released and died in 1941. Then, 2 years later, in 1946, Evelyn's only daughter died of an accidental overdose of sleeping pills at the age of 25, and then the following year, Evelyn died of pneumonia at the age of 60. We got two crackheads in this fucking episode. Two of them. Coming to contact with Hope Diamond and fucking die. Two crackheads. They just want that drug money, people. That's all they fucking want. So, what I'm trying to say is, just give them the money. Listen, if you're walking down the street and a crackhead comes up to you scratching, just give them the fucking money. Just kidding, don't. Don't do that. All right? We love our crackheads, right? Now, the only way I would give somebody a crackhead money is if I needed something done, right? Listen, I'm gonna give you $60. You're gonna go get a gram of coke, right? I will give you that $60 if you roof my house. That motherfucker will roof it in 2 minutes. That dude will be in and out, bro. You won't even know. And that'll be the best roofing job you've ever fucking gotten, okay? Bro, people forget about the crackheads and how good they are at doing what they do, okay? You need a fridge installed and you forgot your truck, bro, go get a crackhead, give him $60 and he'll huff that bitch on top of his shoulders and he will walk 5 miles to your fucking house with that fridge on his shoulders, bro. People underestimate the crackheads, right? Don't forget about the crackheads, people. If you see one, give them some money, give them something to do, and it'll be done in a quick and orderly fashion. Now, after Mrs. McLean, you know, died, the Hope Diamond was given to her grandchildren with the requirement that it would remain in the custody of trustees until the eldest child reached 25 years of age. This would have prevented any sale for the next 2 decades. However, Evelyn died deeply in debt, and the trustees gained permission to sell her jewels to settle her debts. And in 1949, her jewel collection was sold to New York diamond merchant Harry Winston. In addition to the Hope Diamond, the collection also included the 94.8-carat star of the East Diamond, the 15-carat star of the South Diamond, a 9-carat green diamond, and a 31-carat diamond, which is now called the McLean Diamond. I said diamond so much there. Holy shit, that was weird. Now, for the next 10 years, the Hope Diamond was shown at many exhibits and charitable events worldwide in November of 1958, Winston donated the Hope Diamond to the Smithsonian Institute to help establish a national jewel collection. Now, allegedly, there was one last victim of the Hope Diamond's curse, a postman named James Todd. After promising to donate the diamond, Winston sent it through the U.S. mail from New York to Washington, D.C. After Todd delivered the package, he crashed his truck and shattered his leg. God, that was straight to the point. Like I said, I wrote this script like a few weeks ago, so I was getting to the point. That's funny. That's really, really fucking funny. He then got into another crash, injuring his head. He also lost his wife and dog to untimely deaths, and afterward, part of his house burned down. Since the Smithsonian had acquired the gemstone, the curse, quote-unquote curse, appears to have gone extinct, dormant, nada. It's not here. And for decades, the Hope Diamond and the rest of the museum's gem collection have brought only good luck to the museum with higher attendance. Owning the diamond has brought nothing but luck for the nonprofit National Museum, according to a Smithsonian curator. It has helped it build a world-class gem collection with rising attendance levels. Today, the Hope Diamond, described as the most famous diamond in the world, is exhibited in the Harry Winston Room in the Hall of Geology, Gems, and Minerals of the Natural History Museum of the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. In the pennant surrounding the Hope Diamond are 16 white diamonds. The necklace chain contains 45 white diamonds, and it was last reported to be insured for $250 million. And that is the end of the episode. Hope you guys had a good day. That was awkward. I meant to say, I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. It was tragic, nonetheless. What do we got coming? Okay, so I need to apologize to you guys, because I said this Sunday we were doing the BTK killer. Okay, upon further investigation, found out that he did all of his killings in Kansas, and before you make fun of me, the reason I thought he was in Oklahoma was because of this newspaper title that said, "The BTK killer helps Oklahoma authorities search his properties." Okay, so when I read it, they actually brought neighboring Oklahoma authorities to come and help search the property that's in Kansas. I didn't really read the article because I was totally unintrigued finding out that the BTK killer was not in Oklahoma. Personally, I think he's the dumbest fucking serial killer, but when we come to Kansas, that's the killer we're going to do. So, unless they got something else interesting. For Oklahoma, we're actually doing a really, really kind of crazy one. Smart dude, I guess is what you would say, because he really cheated the system with murdering people. But his name is William Hale. And he is allegedly the, you know, Oklahoma's most notorious serial killer. So it's an older dude, probably like, I think from what I remember, it's like early to mid 1900s is when he was out there doing his thing. So it's going to be a good episode. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. So that's all I really got for you guys. It's Friday. Enjoy the rest of it. I mean, what is it? 53 minutes? Fuck, I was close. I was really close to being it. Well, I guess, I mean, we're close to an hour, but I thought it was going to be past an hour. So much fucking reading. But that's okay. It was a good episode. Yeah. Depending. When do I release these? Noon? So it's about 1 right now, if you listen to it at noon. So I got like 4 more hours. Halfway through the day. So, enjoy the rest of your 4 hours, okay? If you're in Minnesota, it's going to be a really, really warm weekend. Well, I assume it's going to be warm everywhere because it's April now. But, like, it's going to be a really, really warm weekend. So, go out, have some fun, get some of that sunshine.
get a little tan, get sexy, or get promiscuous, like Marie Antoinette is being described in this story. But, yeah, that's all I got for you guys. Enjoy the weekend. I'll see you guys tomorrow, possibly, or officially on Sunday. So, remember, stay frosty, stay foxy, and the most important thing, the most important thing on this planet, stay safe, you beautiful peacocks. I love y'all. Deuces.